What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I am King Kaz. That is JVZ. It is Sunday.
It's the middle of October, and so there is a ton of sports stuff happening. It's the coalescence of all the major sports, and most notably, the World Series is about to start. We have our two teams, the Houston Astros and the Washington Nationals. The Nationals basically destroyed the Cardinals, who had pretty much no chance. I don't know if they actually did. They even score a run this entire. I don't know if they did, but they just destroyed them by, you know, like 7-0, 8-0 games like that, 4 in a row. That's it. And then the Astros made pretty short work of the Yankees in 6 games with a walk-off home run from Jose Altuve to clinch everything. And, so game one is going to be in Houston on Tuesday. Both of these two teams have excellent pitching. So if you're a fan of not seeing a lot of runs scored, then this will be, well, and good pitching in general, then this will be the World Series for you.
And, yeah, I saw an interesting article that said the Yankees
Guys,
what's up?
It's especially good if you appreciate the starting pitching rotation from the Detroit Tigers from a few years ago. It's got Justin Verlander. It'll be Max Scherzer and Anibal Sanchez for the Washington Nationals as well. It's great. It's really great.
So add Garrett Cole to that. Add Steven Strasburg to that. There's going to be a lot of, I don't know exactly who's going to start game one, but throughout the series, there's going to be some excellent matchups. So home runs are down in general. So maybe we might see some more base running. So some people are suspecting that the balls, the previously juiced balls have been de-juiced.
It sounds so silly.
It does. So ridiculous. It's just like, you know, people that are tracking like travel distance for the balls, like they're just noticing a huge, like noticeable drop in travel distance, and a lot of balls that probably should have been home runs had the same regular season trends took place are falling short. There's some weird stuff happening, and it's weird that something like the manufacturing of baseballs can have such an effect on the way the game is played. But that's what the statisticians are noticing. So they've kind of ruled out that it's not just better pitching that's causing this. It's balls that are being hit that should leave the park are not. And something's up, whether it's with the aerodynamics or the composition of the ball, or maybe Rawlings just had a bad batch or something. It's some weird shit's going on. But all right, this should help out the pitch. So if you like pitching, watch this World Series.
So let's talk about some football stuff that's going on. So the LA stadium that is being built is reportedly costing $2.5 billion over budget. And NFL owners are starting to talk about having players help pay for it.
Yeah, in total, it's going to cost like $5 billion, which I don't know why, because most stadiums cost, or most like open, you know, football sized stadiums cost like $1 billion or $1.5 billion.
One of the things I was thinking about is maybe it's adding a lot of amenities and things like that, especially for possible season ticket holders, since it's going to be a two-team stadium. It is going to be a stadium that will host the Rams and the Chargers.
It's going to be the Rams stadium. For two stadiums. It's going to be the Rams stadium, and the Chargers are going to pay rent. So it's basically like the Rams get to decide what's in the stadium. And this was the whole reason they moved from St. Louis to LA, was to get the stadium. And now they're paying twice as much as they thought they would for it. And it's so much so that they're apparently hurting for cash, which I don't know, to me, like, if that's the case, then you should never have moved in the first place. And so this whole thing just seems like a huge clusterfuck that we'll kind of just have to wait and see, because this is affecting collective bargaining agreement negotiations between the players and the owners, with the owners wanting the players to wanting them to help subsidize the cost of this, which this is not a stadium that was subsidized by any government money, but it almost seems sillier, or maybe not so much sillier, to ask the players to pay for it. But it's, with all the shenanigans that took place just to move the Rams from St. Louis, it's, and then for the Chargers to move up from San Diego, it's just never should have happened. These were ownership shenanigans, and ownership should have to deal with this.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of players, let's talk about one in particular, and that's Brock Osweiler, yes, who will be retiring from the NFL with a career record of 15-15, which you might be like, well, that seems pretty mediocre for what was a mediocre quarterback who actually made a lot of money playing in the NFL.
Yes.
Gentlemen.
So that's $1.38 million per start.
I want to say, I think that if there is ever a Sports Odds and Ends Hall of Fame, mm-hmm, I'd like to make my first nomination to be Brock Osweiler.
At the very least, they keep getting them checks, Hall of Famer. Because the thing is, this isn't like Jamarcus Russell or like one of those draft picks that got a shit ton of money and then never panned out and then didn't make it past their first contract. Brock Osweiler made it past his first contract. He was supposed to be the heir apparent to Peyton Manning in Denver, and then played for part of a season, did okay, and then got replaced by Manning in the playoffs. They went on to win a Super Bowl, and then Manning retired, and then Denver decided not to keep him around, but that didn't really stop the Houston Texans for throwing a gigantic contract at him, which of course he's not going to turn down. So it ended up being such a bad contract that the Texans gave the Browns a second round pick just so that they would take Osweiler and his contract. And then he didn't make it past training camp. Somehow made his way back to the Broncos and made it to the Dolphins last year.
Like you said, right, he's had a very interesting career, and there's interesting things like this article points out. You said he was supposed to be the heir apparent to Manning. That didn't pan out. He was selected in the 2012 draft, 28 picks before a relatively notable quarterback, Russell Wilson. And then, like you said, there's the money. The man in seven seasons has made a astounding amount of money for the stats and at this point career that he had.
Yeah, as we said, $1.8 million per start. If you were to break it down by touchdown, that's $1.12 million per touchdown thrown, $35,500 per pass that he's thrown. So, didn't play that much. Didn't do that well when he did play, but somehow got himself a $72 million deal in free agency with $37 million guaranteed. So keep getting them. Well, don't keep getting them checks. You're done with that. But, congratulations for getting the checks that you did. Have a nice rest of your life. We would all do that if we had the opportunity. All right. So moving on to a sad story. Patrick Day, a 27-year-old boxer, has died from head injuries sustained in his fight with Charles Conwell. This kind of happened. This happened about a week ago, and it's just kind of the latest out of a couple deaths in boxing. In a way, it just kind of reminds us that some of these combat sports are dangerous. Obviously, Charles Conwell, who was his opponent in the fight, is really, really broken up about this. And so, when something like this happens in a combat sport, it doesn't just affect the person who died and their family, but their opponent as well, who has to kind of live with, the fact that, their actions were kind of despite the fact that they were doing everything by the rules and everything, it was just kind of a direct cause in another person dying. He was knocked out in the 10th round. He had to undergo emergency brain surgery. It almost kind of raises the question of what could have been done in sporting wise within the rules to prevent something like this. And I don't know if there is an answer to that. I think it's kind of just the sport is just inherently dangerous. And when you come to that conclusion, you almost wonder about the future of the sport and how many people are going to want to participate in it, knowing that there's just not a whole lot that they can do within the sport to prevent something like this.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing to look at in that sense. And it definitely, you just feel kind of bad for everyone involved, because like you said, it wasn't anything excessive. It was just kind of the dangers of the sport itself. Not only do I feel bad, for this young man dying, doing something that he loved, I also feel bad for his opponent, who has a really, really good heartfelt, piece in that is attached to this Guardian article. So I would definitely go check that out and read it, because these were two guys just doing a thing that they love to do and that they're trained to do, and just kind of like a run of just bad circumstances. But it is known to be a very dangerous sport. So it's one of those things where you can't really blame anyone, or you feel like you can't blame anyone, even though you want to. Our condolences goes out to Patrick Day and Charles Conwell as well, who has to kind of deal with that sense of undoubt because he feels like he probably did something wrong, even though he didn't. A really tough story. Definitely go check it out over at The Guardian. And I guess we'll try to move on from there to talk about more of the NBA and China fallout. LeBron, like last week, made some comments that criticized Daryl Moore, the general manager of the Houston Rockets, on the things that he said, which has now caused a lot of backlash onto LeBron James. The Hong Kong protesters have been seen burning his jersey. There have been protests for the NBA games that have been played in China. There was also something, and I wish I had linked it to you, of a guy buying a bunch of seats at a game and having people sit there with masks and things like that on.
People have shirts and stuff that are going to be printed and they're just going to hand them out before the NBA regular season is about to start. So I think they're kind of planning these, a lot of these things for like the first game, and kind of taking the Area 51 approach of they can't stop us all. Mm-hmm. And so it's, I think the NBA is kind of taken they've stepped away from kind of being the bad guy on this, because they've also held firm when it comes to like, we are not punishing Daryl Morey for for speaking his mind on this, and we don't punish players for this, and stuff like that. But yeah, LeBron, I think a lot of his comments were caused by the fact that his team was in China when this took place, and so they had to deal with the fallout like in China, and so he was critical of not just Daryl Morey for like the remarks he made, but also for the timing of it and the fact that it put him and his teammates in a bad position. People have already taken that and run with it, and basically nobody is safe from this controversy, because even if you had nothing to say about this situation at all, if you're somebody like Buddy Hield, who is looking for a contract extension, but now all of a sudden everybody's looking at the salary cap, next year and the year after that, and nobody wants to give out a max contract this year because, I shouldn't say that. Pascal Siakam just signed one, but the teams are going to be reluctant to give out max contracts this year or max contract extensions, knowing that the salary cap the next couple of years is going to be a lot lower than we expected. I think we said last week it was going to be like 15% lower, and that's how much business the NBA lost with all of this China controversy. So, yeah, I mean, personally, I'm watching this Buddy Hield situation because I really do want the Kings to sign him long term. But I think eventually they'll get a deal done, but it probably won't be, won't be as much as Buddy Hield wants. But hopefully it's something they can agree on before contract extensions have to be signed. I think this coming Monday, which is, tomorrow. So, yeah. So a lot of financial negotiations, and I think that'll bring us to one of our main stories this week, and that's the negotiation between Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball for how to handle player development in the coming years. And so
there's a lot of interesting stuff here with this kind of MLB and minor league baseball thing, and it's pretty meaty. We have a couple of cool good articles that you can check out from Baseball America and The Atlantic. You do need a user account to read the full story that we linked to at The Atlantic. At The Athletic. But it's definitely worth checking out. It's definitely worth reading and kind of going through. We're going to try to hit some of the baselines here. One of the big things is their proposal to reduce the number of minor league teams, which I have always thought the number of minor league teams did seem a bit excessive. There are teams that own upwards of like three or four minor league teams.
I think it's actually more than that. Just judging by like what they're proposing to reduce this to. So it's a lot more than you'd expect. I think coming from the perspective of a basketball fan, it's like, we're not even every NBA team has a G League affiliate yet. It's weird to see, like,
So, stop me if I'm wrong. I think we can make a comparable comparison to the NBA and kind of European soccer, mostly English Premier League soccer, in the sense that you have your primary money-making team, and then you kind of have what almost should be in a sense with baseball and how baseball is, and I think the ubiquity of baseball in America, your city teams, your lower league teams that you can pull up from and have their league. But I always kind of defer to, I think the Premier League structure of the higher tier, mid tier, lower tier is what a lot of other sports should strive to recreate, maybe. And then I know you're kind of a soccer aficionado, so I don't know.
Well, so it's not quite like that. It's similar in the sense that every Premier League team and pretty much every team in European soccer kind of has a main roster and then a reserve team and then like an under 18 team, with like their academy and so that's kind of just three developmental tiers, and so the rest of the structure is these teams moving up and down a ladder depending on how good they are. So that's more similar to college football and like Division One, Division Two, etc. Except competition actually decides, you know, whether teams move up and down or not, and not like the you know, how much money they bring in or anything like that. Although that is certainly a factor, and those two things kind of go hand in hand. And Major League Baseball, the major and minor league baseball thing. I was actually like, I really learned a lot from reading these articles, because I thought it was, I thought the major league teams actually owned these minor league teams. But they are actually kind of, and I hesitate to use the word independent entities, but they are separately owned teams, and they just have player development contracts with the major league teams. So just to use a local example here, like the Sacramento River Cats are a AAA team, that is the highest minor league tier, and they have a player development contract with the San Francisco Giants, who are close by. They used to have a player development contract with the Oakland A's, who are also close by. But I think when that contract expired, they used that as leverage to, you know, either pay us more money or we'll switch to a different team. Like we'll work with the Giants instead of with you guys. And so that was part of their negotiation, and that back and forth kind of happens every 2 years or so. And so that's kind of one of the ways that minor league clubs kind of wield their power over major league teams. Whereas, you know, in the NBA, they're working from a different system. They started with all these NBA teams, and now they're trying to establish a developmental league. And so each team is now, they're setting it up so that a lot of the parent teams own their G League affiliates, and because of that, they get to control a bunch of like everything involved in the development process, where the team is located, where, you know, what kind of coaches are hired for the developmental team. They're very hands-on in the process, and they get to, not just where the team is located, but the facilities that they're located in, and teams that are very forward-thinking, they invest a lot in those things, because, you know, some of those players that play for these developmental teams might end up on the parent teams. So baseball, like that's the actual process that, players go through. They get drafted and then they work their way up the system, but teams don't control a whole lot of that process, or they don't control the facilities, the accommodations, the travel, all that. The minor league teams control that. The parent teams just pay the players' salaries. And so I think this is major league teams wanting to assert more control.
So one of the other things that kind of caught my attention in this was the talk of like having more of that revenue share and more of those cost shares split between major league teams and minor league teams, because that was, like you said, there was a lot in this article that I didn't know about, because with all those things that you listed, I didn't even understand the cost on major league teams paying a lot of these minor league teams and things like that. And that was very interesting to me, especially this. You have one of the notes in here that I think is also interesting with us talking about that kind of comparison to the Premier League in having a reconstruction of the leagues in using a promotion and demotion system for some of the teams.
This would be just a one-time thing. So this isn't like establishing a permanent system of promoting and relegating teams, but this is like, right now, like teams are kind of separated into several different leagues. Like I think the AAA league out here is like the Pacific Coast
Double League.
So these minor league players are, you know, these aren't nationwide leagues, basically, is what we're getting at. And but, you know, sometimes you have like, the Pacific Coast League, and then they're flying out to Tennessee to play a game or something, because there's this one team that's just kind of out there and for some odd reason. So they're trying to like geographically restructure some of the leagues to make it so that teams travel less. They're also like, you know, there's some teams out there that have basically just not invested in their facilities at all. So they're playing in like really shitty stadiums and so they want to establish like a minimum baseline that like, if you cannot like meet these requirements, because we're sending our players to you. And if you can't meet these requirements, then we don't want to have player development contracts with you anymore. So this could drop the number of teams, of minor league teams, from 160 to 120, which sounds like a big deal. And it sucks for the communities that might lose these teams. But I mean, we've been saying on the show that like minor league players need to be paid more. I was surprised to see that there were this many teams, and I don't know if every team needs like five minor league clubs. Like I think, you know, especially when most of those guys are not going to be making it to the major leagues, because ultimately that's what this is supposed to be supporting. So like, I think like tiers makes sense,
man,
but like, why are there five for every team?
Yeah, that is excessive, but even the thought of the possibility of having a promotion demotion thing in baseball, I think would be amazing. I think it would bring more attention. Like, obviously it's not going to happen at the major league level, but if the minor league can become this thing where the investment of that team is making it from single A to double A to triple, you know what I mean? Like, I think that would be amazing. I think that would draw more attention to that tiered system in baseball that people have no clue how it even works or what it is or what it's for. Other than maybe like a check mark of skill. Like, if you're in triple A, you're obviously better than the guys in double and single A, and that maybe you're almost ready for the majors. But I think in this thing of trying to make baseball America's pastime, which they also talk about the American Pastime Act in some of these articles, which is really interesting, an interesting read. But to kind of stick to the promotion demotion thing, I think would be just a godsend in a sense.
All right. Well, I do know that DGM hates that. so before we irritate him anymore by talking about that, let's move on to college football, which is another place where that might actually help. Because we've got a team that is tanking in college football. And if there's one thing that promotion and relegation solves, it's tanking. because college football, there's like no incentive to be bad. Usually, like,
the general consensus is you want to be good every single year, because that shows that, one, you have the talent, two, you're good at finding the talent, and three, you're good at teaching talent.
Yeah, and that helps you recruit, because there is no draft. There's no draft lottery. There's like like you need to be. This is why like a team like Alabama has no problem getting recruits because they're winning every year. Like, you know, like all the top teams, that's, you know, that's what they do. They win, then they recruit, and then they get more good players. And, mm-hmm. you know, so like that, there's nothing where like, if you're bad, you get first pick at the high school kids. Like, it doesn't work that way. So there's no reason to tank, period. But the Houston Cougars are doing that. And they're doing that by kind of manipulating player eligibility. There's their starting quarterback, De'Ara King, and their number two receiver, Keith Corbin, are quote unquote voluntarily sitting out the remainder of this season to preserve their eligibility for next season. And so what they're trying to do is kind of take their talent that probably would have graduated this year. And stack them into next year where they'll have like a little bit more talent, and you know, some other players that, you know, that are going to be ready to start. And so they're just trying to, like, you kind of go through these cycles with college football with, like, you know, you get a player for 4 years, 5 years max, sometimes even less if they come out early. And so they're basically trying to take their recruiting classes and concentrate all of their talent into a single season. So this isn't going to be like a long-term tank where, like, you know, where you expect to draft a guy and then that guy becomes your franchise guy for like the next 10 years. Like it doesn't work that way. These guys graduate after a while. So this is just a very, like, it's a short-term tank, and, you know, with, like, this is only going to help for one season, but everybody else that's on the team, like, all, there's 19 seniors on the roster, and you know, they're not going to be able to play again next year, and you know, they're not going to be able to have their eligibility messed with like this. It's, you know, they're but, you know, you're giving up on this season, you're giving up on them. And you're basically signaling to them that, you know, they're not important. They're just going to be throwaway players, and they're just there to play out the season. But, you know, except for these two exceptional players, they're the ones that are actually worth, you know, taking and saving until next year. But the rest of you guys suck. You know, just play out the season, you know. And I hate this. I hate this. That's like, I'm fired about it because I hate tanking in general, and, you know, and the fact that it's made its way into college football, which doesn't need it, you know, which I, like, I already have my own issues with college football and I hate it enough, and now something that I hate has wormed its way into it. It's just made it worse.
No, I mean, I under, like, there is no part of this story that makes sense to me. Outside of maybe the eligibility thing, which I've seen other teams do throughout the years, and saving a guy when they know they have another guy who is going to be able to match them and they're going to be able to play better together, kind of a thing. But in this sense of the literal kind of tanking to play better later thing is just kind of foreign to me with college sports. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense. There's a lot of weirdness going on here that I think there's something deeper possibly happening, but yeah. And it's still interesting, but I agree with you. It's just kind of like bad form.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend that this is like some sort of conspiracy, just because, like, I think it's just a dumb strategy and somebody thinking that they're smart and like they'll get one good year out of this, maybe. But, you know,
it's so up in the air, right? It's so up in the air in college that doing this has benefit, right? Because like you said, there's no guarantee that you're going to get some kind of value out of this.
Yeah, and it's just for one season, so like it's almost like, what's the point? Because it's, and to me it's so antithetical to what college football should be. Like, at its mm-hmm. core, it should still be a developmental league. You know, these guys are going to leave in a couple years and they're going to like these guys come into your program hoping that they can get good enough that they get noticed by NFL teams, and you know, and they can play, they can achieve their dream of getting paid to play football as a career. So it's just, you know, I feel like you should equally, I mean, obviously some players are going to be better than others, but I feel like this system works if you as a coach give equal effort into developing these players across the board and not just play this like it is a game, but the purpose shouldn't be the game. The purpose mm-hmm. should be development. And, you know, and just with the commercialization of college football, it's kind of turned this into something else. And it feels dirtier than what it was originally meant to be, I think. Or maybe it was never meant to be that way. Maybe it's just always been this money grab.
Well, moving on from there, and speaking of money grabs, let's talk about soccer teams not paying their players.
Yeah, a very strange protest took place. Strange in the way it played out. I think it is a somewhat creative way to draw attention to the issue. But Club Deportivo Veracruz in Mexico has not been... Their players have not been paid in weeks. For some players, it's been, you know, 5 or 6 months since they've been paid, and you know, they've struggled to pay their rent and mortgages, and some have actually had to give up their houses for this. There's a bunch of issues that they're protesting along with that, like you know, poor facilities for their women's team, the youth team not having proper hydration or proper nutrition, you know, the medical staff not being paid. Basically, like, there's a ton of shit going on at Veracruz, and the players had enough. Basically chose to do like a 3 minute basically at the kickoff against their match with Tigres, they were just going to stand there for 3 minutes and do nothing. And that's what they did. They did that, and then on top of that, like, the bench kind of cleared and stood next to the field in solidarity with the players on the field. They told Tigres that they were going to do this, but apparently there was some miscommunication for how long this was supposed to last, because the Veracruz players stood there for about 3 minutes, but after about 2 minutes in, Tigres just grabbed the ball and they went ahead and scored two goals while Veracruz mm-hmm. kind of just stood there and watched.
Well, part of this that is in there was the Tigres captain said that they thought it was only going to be like a 1 minute protest.
Yeah.
So after those first few minutes, it got kind of awkward for that other team.
There's video of this, and it's all in Spanish, but it's also pretty comical because of normally Spanish speaking announcers are very enthusiastic when things happen, and so they're kind of going nuts over this protest, and then a player grabs the ball and just shoots it, and then it goes, you know, hits the back of the net inside the goal. And normally, instead of just screaming the long goal, they're just kind of like, goal, is that a goal? Is that going to count? And like, yeah. Because of just like this, just the how different the situation is, just like, everybody's like, wait, are they allowed to do that? Are they allowed to just grab the ball and score? And like, actually, like, of course they are. Like, that's, it's in the rules of the game that, you know, you can do that. And that's how matches normally go. But yeah, there's a protest going on, and, you know, and then that happened again. And then after about 5 minutes or so, like, Veracruz players kind of started moving around, but then, you know, they were just kind of intentionally fouling, and then Tigres scored again in the 8th minute, to take a 3-0 lead. And so at that point, that's when everybody actually starts playing. So there's a lot of bad blood in between these two teams. So that's part of why they're, you know, probably part of why Tigres wasn't all that enthusiastic about participating in this protest with Veracruz, or at least, you know, deciding that after a minute, that's enough of this. At that point, you've made your statement. So let's get back to playing. And it's just the situation with Veracruz is this is kind of the boiling point, or at least the most public show of protest with the team. But yeah. It's kind of embarrassing that the league didn't step in, especially when it comes to like wage theft and something that serious. But they claim that there wasn't enough documentation for to prove that the players hadn't been paid, which is a weird thing to say on its own. But now they're trying to assemble some sort of fund to get these players paid. But it's a, you know, just a weird, embarrassing situation all around. And you know, Veracruz is, they were actually technically relegated, but the Mexican ladder structure is kind of weird. And I think they were able to actually pay to get their spot back in the Premier League, or in the top division. So it's, you know, there's some shenanigans going on. SB Nation has a really meaty article about it. So if you're more interested in how this managed to happen, and just check out the article just to check out the video, because that's pretty comical.
Hopefully things works out for these players, because yeah, that's just kind of, like you said, I think you detailed it really well in how weird and just shitty it is. But I do think that version of a protest is a really, really, really good, like, draw of the microscope onto something that is happening, because that is just going to make people, like, it's just going to draw so much attention. So,
yeah, they originally, whatever is going on. Originally, they didn't plan to show up at all. That was going to be their protest. And okay. And I think after the league kind of gathered these funds to get them paid, I think that's when they decided to show up, but do this instead. And I feel like doing this, and the story and the weird way that it's played out has at least drawn our attention. I don't think I would have come across this story had it not been like on the SB Nation front page, and it wouldn't be on the SB Nation front page had it not been this weird, you know, thing where like a team just decides to show up to a game but not play for 8 minutes or so. So it's, yeah, I think, you know, if I hope there aren't other teams out there that have been unpaid for 5 or 6 months.
Jesus.
If that's happening to you at your job, then consider finding other employment.
Yeah. Speaking of finding other employment, let's talk about our boy Rick Fox. So kind of just a quick thing. We've kind of been over all the details of the stuff that's happening with Rick Fox. The fact that they weren't able to really strike a mutual deal to keep Echo Fox in the LCS. So Rick Fox has found a way to spin that in getting a TV show greenlit on CBS about a retired basketball player who buys an esports organization to reconnect with his estranged son. If this sounds familiar to you, this is almost essentially Rick Fox's story. This is interesting, VZ. I don't know what to think about this in any capacity, but this is a kind of an interesting, I want to call it a lateral movement in this Echo Fox story that I did not see happening in my wildest dreams.
Yeah, and so just to round out the Echo Fox stuff, Rick Fox is kind of on his way out of the organization, that League of Legends championship series spot has been sold to Evil Geniuses, I believe. So Fox basically, you know, as he's on his way out, he'll have money from his stake within the organization and what it's grown to. So I guess this is just his next project. And I assumed that he would kind of find his way into another organization, or found another organization, which I think is what he was trying to do. But that's what kind of got him in trouble with the other Echo Fox people, because I think he was trying to poach talent before actually leaving the organization. So this is kind of a nice thing to do kind of outside of league competition. I'm not sure how much mileage he can get out of this. Because it basically a pilot has been greenlit. So he's going to get like one episode. Apparently this pilot has cameos from some people that are involved in League of Legends, like Dash Patterson, the LCS caster, and apparently the entire league or Team Liquid roster. I think they'll probably get a lot of people that are used to watching League to kind of tune into this. But
yeah,
it's a CBS show, and DJM says this is like hashtag falling up. I don't know if, I mean, it definitely is an interesting use of resources after kind of an unceremonious exit from an organization. As far as like the community as a whole, I think this is, you know, it's a sign that competitive gaming is kind of working its way into the mainstream.
I don't know if you've ever seen it or know of it, but the show Ballers, which is a show starring The Rock about sports kind of as a whole, but it mostly focuses on like managers and agents and things like that, have had a few episodes that have featured esports-esque stuff or competitive gaming, you know, kind of in that slew of mixing it with traditional sports. And I think this is kind of in the weird way of DJM's hashtag falling upwards, kind of that trend, right? So you take an established person like Rick Fox, who can draw the attention of the traditional ball sports people. I don't know, kind of in the outward realm, if Rick Fox has the clout that putting someone like The Rock in a TV show would have. I don't think you're just going to get eyes because it's Rick Fox, but maybe you start to get eyes for people whose kids are into the competitive gaming esports thing to look at this in a sense of like they know who Rick Fox is or I don't know. I think it falls in depending on how it's promoted. And then I think you could further go into having other notable competitive gamers featured on the show. You could get a ninja walk on spot, you know, because it's a single camera comedy show, right? So you can have these walk-on guest who happened to be there for whatever reason, for whatever episode, show up and then just disappear. Yeah. So it has, you know, I mean, like on paper, it has a lot of possibility.
Yeah. It's, to me, it's weird that the show is kind of on CBS because, I don't know. I feel like CBS is, It's one of those networks that kind of caters to as wide an audience as possible. You know, like their shows draw huge numbers, but it's also just because their shows to me are just not that interesting. I know I sound kind of weirdly hipster and gatekeepy when I say something like that, but it's like, you know, they've got shows like The Big Bang Theory where it's like, you know, hey, this is what nerds are like. But it's not really, but like this is nerds kind of just like vanilla washed for people that are outside of that, for kind of the as mainstream and as wide of an audience as possible. So yeah, and now that The Big Bang Theory is ending, this is I think this is kind of slotting in as their replacement of like, hey, let's look at what the weird nerds are doing now. They're doing this electronic sports thing. And, yeah,
in Big Bang Theory, you have, you know, those cameos by Neil deGrasse Tyson and you know, all these other notable actual big name scientist. So and the show in it of itself doesn't do any justice to actual science or nerddom. It is just what you think nerds are from the very outside perspective. And I'm sure there is going to be a drilled home lot of this of the regular cast and crew of this show will be what you expect nerds and what you think esports is from the very outside perspective, because that will draw the general audience and the comedy. But to get the wider audience of those people who know to kind of check it out every now and again, yeah, you're going to have the cameos from actual casters of the LCS and actual rostered players. And like I said, you'll probably have those moments of like a Shroud or a Ninja on the show, but it's not going to do any justice, you know, to competitive gaming.
Yeah, it'll just take the concept of it and make it more mainstream, or maybe not. Maybe having we'll see like how involved Rick Fox is, and maybe, you know, if he has a lot of clout and a lot of control, maybe he can make it a little bit more true and authentic. But I'm just worried that it being on CBS kind of makes it like, you know, that this is what competitive gaming is for, you know, the types of people who don't know what it is and don't know, don't care, and thumb their nose at it. Because I don't think CBS or Viacom has done like anything else, or I don't know if Viacom is still part of them, but I don't think they've done anything else regarding competitive gaming. Like, this is not ESPN where they've tried a couple things. This is not, it's a network that has no investment in competitive gaming whatsoever. Now greenlighting, I guess just a pilot of a show.
Yeah. But I think that's the ebb and flow, right? You did your big geeky nerdy thing, like we talked about with Big Bang Theory, right? And now what is kind of on the cusp, you know? Because I bet you if we go and look at what the general populace was talking about, you know, in that time before Big Bang Theory, there are probably some moments of like when Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye and like kind of all these guys were probably coming more into the light of the general populace than living in that normal nerddom. So maybe that was that antithesis of pushing for a show like that. And like we said, competitive gaming is on this kind of daily growth path. So now it's come across someone's attention there to be like, is this something that we can do that will work in doing this, you know, in doing this, having a pilot that talks about that? Will it work? And this is just the, will it work? And they'll go from there.
All right. Well, good luck to them. I probably won't watch it, but I will probably read up about it, and we'll talk about how well it did here. Just cause I don't watch a lot of stuff. So, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. And I think if you guys are interested in that sort of thing, you guys should check it out. For more details on this story and all the other stories that we talked about, head on over to sportsoddsandends.com, where you can find our show notes and links to all of these stories, all of the videos that we're talking about. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at JVZ, Kaz is at King Kaz. DJM is at Call Me DJM. If you end up watching this pilot, tell us on Twitter how you thought it went. And then we can decide whether it's worth it for us to watch. We're also on Patreon, patreon.com/sportsoddsandends, if you want to support the show financially. Thank you to all of our current patrons. Sportsoddsandends.com. Thank you all for listening. We will see you next time.